Animal Companions. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading The Case of the Careless Kitten by Earl Stanley Gardner, and if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. I'm going to start today's readings with The Case of the Careless Kitten by Earl Stanley Gardner. In the last chapter, we learned that Helen had just found out that the uncle that she thought might be dead was actually alive. She was extremely perplexed and agreed to call Perry Mason to investigate, since that's what her uncle had asked her to do. And now we start Chapter 2. Gerald Shore had never had his brother's flair for making money, or rather for keeping money. When Franklin had watched his ever-growing fortune with the tight-lipped determination of a man who knows how to say no, Gerald had spent money recklessly on the easy-come, easy-go theory. Prior to 1929, Gerald had considered himself a wealthy man. Within a few short weeks, he not only had completely stripped all of his property from himself, but had found himself dependent upon his law practice to give him even a living. This period of transition had been most embarrassing. Having adjusted his practice on the theory that he would not waste his time with small cases, that he would see clients by appointment only, and would take only such cases as interested him, Gerald suddenly found himself eager to accept any honorable employment where there was even a fair possibility for a fee. Holding the kitten close, feeling the convulsive waves that racked its little body, Helen thought gratefully that Uncle Gerald was more sympathetic, more understanding than any man she'd ever known. She wondered if he had always been like this. Certainly his difficulties and his trouble had not hardened him. It seemed even that since the crash he had been more gentle and more tolerant than before. Whereas Aunt Matilda's ire was for Como to put the kitten out of the way, Uncle Gerald obviously recognized a major emergency that relegated traffic laws to the background. It was but a matter of minutes before they had amber eyes in the hands of a competent veterinarian. Dr. Blakely, making a quick diagnosis, reached for a hypodermic needle. It isn't rabies, is it? Helen asked. Oh, probably poison, he said. Here, hold the cat's head. Hold him tightly by the neck and shoulders. Hold him firmly and don't let go if he starts fighting. He inserted the hypodermic needle, carefully regulated the amount of fluid which he injected, withdrew the needle and said, temporarily we'll put him in this cage. The kitten's going to eject the contents of its stomach. In that way, we'll get rid of any poison which remains. How long ago was he when you first observed any of the symptoms? I don't think it could possibly have been over 5 or 10 minutes, Helen said. It didn't take us over 3 minutes to get here, and, well, perhaps 10 minutes ago. We stand a good chance, Dr. Blakely said. Nice little kitten. Hope we can save it. You think it's poison? I think so. The treatment isn't going to be particularly pleasant. You'll think the animal is suffering even more than it is now. You two had better wait out in the office. If I need any more help, I'll call you. He drew on a thick pair of leather gloves. You sure there's nothing we can do? Helen asked. He shook his head. I can let you know more in a few minutes. It had been playing out in the yard, hadn't it? No, I don't think so. I don't remember distinctly, but I think the kitten had been in the living room all the time. Well, we'll find out more about it after a while. Go sit down and wait. Out in the waiting room, Gerald Shore settled himself in a chair, fished for a cigar from his waistcoat pocket, bit off the end, and stuck a match on the end of the cigar. The flame, which was held in his cupped hands, illuminated the sensitive outlines of his features, the sweep of a high, contemplative forehead, kindly tolerant eyes, about which were little crow's feet of humor, a mouth which was uncompromising and determined without being too stern. Nothing we can do now, Helen. May as well sit down and take it easy. We've done everything we can. They sat silently for several minutes, Helen's mind tumbling around between the strange telephone call and amber eyes, and now poison. What should she do about her Uncle Franklin? In spite of what he had said, she wanted to confide in Uncle Gerald, but she hesitated. Gerald Shore was quite evidently lost in his thought, his mind occupied with a problem that plainly required concentration. Abruptly, he said, "Helen, as I told you a few days ago, we're going to do something about Franklin's will immediately. Matilda has been hanging on to what belongs to us long enough. Perhaps we ought to wait just a little," Helen murmured uncertainly. "We've waited long enough." He saw that Helen was hesitating, trying to make up her mind to speak or to keep silent. "Well," he asked, "what is it?" Helen suddenly made up her mind with a rush. I had your, you know, well, I had a queer experience today," she blurted out. "What?" "A man telephoned." Gerald chuckled. "I'd say it was queerer if any man who knew your number hadn't telephoned you. If I weren't your uncle and..." "Don't be ridiculous." The man said, "Oh, it just doesn't sound plausible. It just can't be true." "If you'd be just a little more explicit," Gerald murmured encouragingly. Helen's voice dropped almost a whisper. "He said he was Franklin Shore. He seemed to recognize my voice. He wanted to know if I recognized him." Gerald Shore's face showed bafflement, incredulous surprise. "Nonsense," he exclaimed. "It's true. Helen, you're excited. You, Uncle Gerald, I swear it." There was a long pause. "When did the call come in?" Gerald asked finally. "Just a few minutes before you came into the house." "Some imposter, of course, trying to..." "No, it was Uncle Franklin." "Look here, Helen, did you..." "This is... that is... well, was there anything familiar about his voice?" "I don't know. I couldn't be sure of the voice, but it was Uncle Franklin, all right." Her Uncle Gerald frowned at the tip of his cigar. "It's impossible. What did he say?" "He wants me to meet him tonight at the Castle Gate Hotel." "That's it. I'm to see a man named Henry Leach there, and Henry Leach will take me to Uncle Franklin." Gerald Shore relaxed. "That settles it. Obviously an imposter after money. We'll go to the police and set a trap for your friend." Helen shook her head. "Uncle Franklin told me to see that well-known lawyer. You know his name? I think it's Perry Mason. Tell him the whole story and bring him to the meeting tonight." Gerald Shore stared at her blankly. "It's the damnedest thing I've ever heard of. What does he want with Perry Mason?" "I don't know." "Look here," Gerald said somewhat sternly. "You don't know that was Franklin talking, do you, Helen?" "Well, then stop referring to that person as Franklin. That might affect the legal situation. All you know is you heard a man's voice over the telephone. That man told you he was Franklin Shore. He said things that proved it." "What?" "A lot of things out of my childhood that only Uncle Franklin would know about. The time the kitten got up on the roof of the house and couldn't get down, and he rescued it. All about the New Year's party when I was 13 and sneaked the punch and got tipsy. No one ever knew about that except Uncle Franklin. He followed me up to my room and he was perfect about it. He just sat down and started talking. Even when I developed a laughing jag, he pretended not to notice. He told me that he didn't agree with Matilda's idea of bringing me up and that I was getting to be a big girl and I would have to be experimenting with my life, but that it would be better if I learned how dangerous drinking is and learned to gauge just how much I could take. And maybe for a few years, it would be better if I didn't drink at all. And then he got up and he walked out." Gerald's brows were level with thought. "And this person told you all about that when he called?" Helen nodded. Gerald Shore got up from the chair, walked over toward the window, stood with his hands in his pocket. Outwardly, he seemed calm and thoughtful. Only the rapid little puffs of his cigar smoke, which emerged from his mouth, showed nervousness. "What happened after that?" he asked. "Then Uncle Franklin, this man, whoever he was, asked me to get Perry Mason and be at the Castle Gate Hotel at 9 o'clock and ask for Henry Leach." "But good heavens, Helen, if it was Franklin who was talking over the telephone, why in the world didn't he come home at..." "That's what I kept wondering about. And then I thought perhaps, well, you know, if he'd gone away with some other woman, I guess he wants to pave the way for coming back and probably wants some time to sound out Aunt Matilda on how she'll feel. But why didn't he call me? I'm his brother. I'm a lawyer. Why did he call you? I don't know. He said I was the only one who could help him. Perhaps he tried to reach you and couldn't. And what happened after that? How did the conversation terminate? He acted as though something had surprised him, as though someone had come in the room or something. He gave a quick little exclamation and hung up the telephone very abruptly. He asked you not to tell anyone? Yes, but I thought I should tell you under the circumstances. You didn't tell Matilda? No. Sure, she hasn't any suspicion? No, I'm sure she thought I was talking to Jerry, and right after that, she noticed the kitten was having spasms. Poor Amber Eyes. How could he possibly have gotten poison? I don't know, Gerald said somewhat shortly. Let's quit thinking about the kitten for a moment and think about Franklin. This doesn't make sense. 10 years of silence, and then this fantastic stage play of a return? Personally, I always thought he'd run away with the woman. I felt sure he'd left Matilda some note that she'd suppressed. I thought as time passed without any word, except that a card from Miami, that things probably hadn't gone so well. I always considered the possibility that he might have committed suicide. He'd have preferred that way out rather than face the humiliation of ignominious return. Gerald pushed his hands down more deeply into his pockets, stared out of the window. After a time, he turned around and said to Helen, when Franklin left, Matilda had a lot of the property in her name. If Franklin should show up, he's not going to have much left for himself. You and I will have nothing. Franklin's my brother. He's your uncle. We both hope he's alive, but he is going to have to prove it. Dr. Blakely came out of the operating room. Your kitten was poisoned, he said to Helen. You're certain, absolutely. Gerald turned away from the window to regard the doctor gravely. What did you find? Some poisoned meat had been administered, but a very short time before the kitten was brought here. There were tablets of poison in the meat, perhaps more than one. I recovered a part of one tablet which hadn't as yet fully dissolved. It had probably been embedded in a piece of meat, and the kitten digestant juices hadn't thoroughly dissolved it. Will he live? Helen asked. Yes, he's going to be all right now. You can come back and get him in an hour, or maybe two. You'd better let him either stay here for a few days or let some friend keep him. Someone very deliberately tried to poison your kitten. You probably have some neighbor who doesn't like animals or some particular reason for disliking you. Why, I can't believe such a thing's possible, Helen said. Dr. Blakely shrugged his shoulders. Poison tablets packed in small wads of meat, such as was given this kitten, indicate the work of a deliberate poisoner. We have trouble with poisoners in various parts of the city. Usually they're after the dogs. They prepare little balls of meat and toss them into the yard. The dog grabs them eagerly. It's rather unusual that a kitten as young as this one gets such a big dose of poison, Gerald said abruptly. You want the kitten to stay away from the house for a few days, doctor? Yes. Is he out of danger now? Yes. But I want to give him some further treatment, an hour or so. Helen said, let's come back right after dinner and get him, Uncle Gerald. Then we can take him down to Tom Lunk, the gardener. He has a little bachelor shack that's out of the neighborhood. Amber Eyes loves him and will be happy there. That sounds like an excellent plan, Dr. Blakely said. Gerald sure nodded. All right, come on. Helen, you've got a lot to do. 4 or 5 blocks from the veterinary's, Gerald Shore pulled into the curb in the front of a drugstore. That appointment with Perry Mason, he explained. I know him slightly, so I'll telephone for you. It will be a miracle if we can catch him now. He's a law unto himself as far as office hours go, and a lot of other things as well. A few minutes later, he emerged. In an hour at his office. That all right? Helen nodded. Hadn't you better come with me? No, you tell him the story better. If you do it in your own way without having me there, I'm particularly anxious to see how he reacts to it, if he gets the same impression I do. I told him I'd meet you somewhere in front of the Castle Gate Hotel at 9. What's your impression, Uncle Gerald? He smiled affectionately but shook his head. His concentration was on his driving for a moment. Then he turned to Helen. You really don't know whether the kitten was outdoors late this afternoon. I've been trying to think, Uncle Gerald. I remember he was out in the backyard about 3 o'clock, but I can't remember that he was out after that. Who was at the house this afternoon? Como and Aunt Matilda and the cook. Who else? Under the direct impact of his eyes, she felt herself coloring. Jerry Templar. How long before the kitten developed those spasms? Not very long. Was George Alber there? Yes, only for a few minutes. He came to see Aunt Matilda and then kept hanging around until Jerry came. Then I got rid of him in a hurry. Why? A muscle flickered in Gerald's cheek as if his jaws had tightened. How much do you know about this devotion of Matilda to George Alber? I know she likes him, Helen said. She's always... You don't know what's behind it, then. You don't know that she almost married his father? I never knew that. It's hard to imagine. Aunt Matilda is ever having been... She was, though, along in 1920, when she was 40 or so. She was an attractive widow, and Stephen Alber was a good-looking widower. George is a lot like him. It wasn't any wonder to us that they fell for each other. It was a good deal more of a wander when they had a quarrel and Matilda married Franklin. I always thought she did that mainly to hurt Stephen. It did hurt him, too, but he got over it. Married 2 or 3 years afterward. You probably remember when he was divorced along about 1930. Helen shook her head. It's hard to believe anybody could ever have been in love with Aunt Matilda. And it's even harder to imagine her being in love. But she was. She was much in love that I don't think she ever got over it. I think she's still in love with Stephen Alber. I think the biggest of her reasons for hating Franklin isn't that he walked out on her. She knew he'd always hated Stephen Alber. I'm pretty sure that the thing she can't forgive him for is what he did to Steve. What did he do? Helen said. Nothing really. The bank did it after Franklin disappeared. But I shouldn't wonder if he'd been getting ready to do it before he left. The big smash in 1929 hit Alber pretty hard, along with everybody else, but he managed to save some of the pieces. He hung on to them till 1932, just after Franklin left. Then the bank put on the screws. I shouldn't wonder if Franklin had been intending to do it himself. He certainly didn't like Alber. Anyway, Alber went under and never came up again. Perhaps that wasn't what killed him, but I guess it helped. Aunt Matilda? He stopped. They were almost home. I'm going with you tonight. I'll be outside of the castle gate at 9. Helen hesitated. Uncle Franklin said I mustn't bring anybody except Mr. Mason. He sounded terribly in earnest about it. No matter, Gerald said. I'm going with you. His voice dropped a tone as he stopped in front of the house. Be careful, whatever you say. There's George Alber. And that's the end of that particular chapter in the case of the careless kitten with Earl Stanley Garner. Next week, we'll continue reading to find out what George Alber has to do with the kitten and with Helen and Aunt Matilda. Our next reading comes from the Arizona Humane Society's magazine, Paw Prints, Winter 2026. The article is titled, The Worst Medical Conditions We've Ever Seen. Justice After the Chandler 55 Rescue. April McLaughlin, the individual at the center of the Chandler 55 animal cruelty case, has been sentenced to 3.5 years in prison, 7 years of probation, and is prohibited from owning or caring for animals. While the sentence fell short of the maximum allowed under the law, it marks an important step toward accountability. September 22, 2023 was a day many of the Arizona Humane Society will never forget. That evening, 55 special needs dogs were seized from the McLaughlin's home by the Chandler Police Department. 5 deceased dogs were also discovered in her freezer. Our animal rescue and cruelty team rushed the surviving dogs to our trauma hospital, where they received urgent medical care and compassion throughout a lengthy legal process. The case had a profound impact on our community, but with it also came meaningful change. Chandler 55 helped catalyze the passage of Jerry's Law, Senate Bill 1658, last year, strengthening Arizona's animal cruelty statutes. While more progress is needed, this moment is a powerful reminder of why advocacy matters and why your support is so vital to our mission to save the most vulnerable animals. And here is some important information from the Arizona Humane Society. In 2025, we spayed and neutered 24,916 pets, including 6,192 community cats and pets from financially vulnerable families, thanks to our circle of friends, our most dedicated spay and neuter advocates. We spay and neutered 2,430 pets across our Margaret McAllister Brock Veterinary Clinic's high-volume spay-neuter days, thanks in part to the MCS Charitable Foundation's generous What Would Mary Do grant. And we spayed and neutered 255 pit bulls with the help from our friends at One Love Arizona. Thanks to visionary donors Ann Sinner and the Muggsy Moo Foundation, we will soon announce plans for spay and neuter strategy like our valley has never seen before. Stay tuned for an exciting opportunity about spay and neuter. All of this information is from Arizona Humane Society's Paw Prints Winter 2026 magazine. The North Shore Animal League's magazine, also known as Paw Prints, Issue 1, Spring 2026, has this article. Dobie is granted a new life. When a young dog named Dobie was struck by a car on the busy streets of New York City, his future hung by a thread. Our shelter partner, Animal Care Centers of New York City, alerted us that he was in critical condition. He was suffering from abrasions, multiple pelvic fractures, and suspected internal injuries. Because of the severity of his trauma, he was just hours from euthanasia unless someone stepped forward. Even in pain, this sweet, doe-eyed pup tried to roll over for belly rubs. His spirit was asking for a chance, and we answered. Dobie was immediately transported to our pet health centers, where Chief of Veterinary Staff, Dr. Mark Verdino, and his team began urgent diagnostics, imaging, which suggested that there might be damage to his bladder, but once in surgery, the reality was even more complex. Not what I was expecting, Dr. Verdino recalled. The bladder was intact, but one of his kidneys had been torn away from the ureter. We couldn't repair it, so we had to remove the damaged kidney. Fortunately, his remaining kidney is healthy, and he should be able to live a normal life with just one kidney. In addition to the torn kidney, Dobie had three broken ribs and a fractured pelvis. Because he's a small dog, his pelvis injuries can heal naturally with time and strict rest, and his ribs will also mend on their own. During his initial recovery, Dobie required an abdominal drain and urinary catheter while our team monitored him for bleeding, urine leakage, or infection. Dobie's accident also underscores an important lesson. The vast majority of dogs hit by cars are unneutered males, Dr. Verdino explained. They escape in search of females that are in heat and wind up in dangerous situations. It's one more reminder of how vital spay and neuter programs are in protecting pets. Despite everything he endured, Dobie's gentle nature quickly emerged. He's cautious around loud noises and strangers, but once he feels safe, he leans in for affection, soaking up treats and attention with his soulful, expressive eyes. He walks gingerly, still hesitant to put full weight on his back left leg, but his progress has been steady and encouraging. Today, we are thrilled to share that Dobie is well on the road to recovery and has been officially cleared for adoption. His kidney function is strong, his fractures are healing as expected, and with continued patience and a calm home environment, this resilient little survivor is ready for his new beginnings. From Furry Side Chats, Heartwarming Adoption Tales, this story is about Bernie. When Kevin and his brother walked into North Shore Animal League America this past fall, they weren't sure which dog they'd take home. For more than a decade, the brothers have chosen older dogs, giving them the comfort, security, and joy they may not have known earlier in life. With a senior dog, I know I may not have a lot of time with them, Kevin said, but I know I'm going to give them the best time of their lives. That promise led them straight to Bernie. A longtime resident of our adoption center, Bernie had endured more than his share of upheaval. After being adopted and moving to Tennessee, his adopter sadly passed away, and Bernie was returned to us. One of our devoted volunteers, Janet, had fallen in love with him and generously offered to cover his adoption fee and any medical costs, hoping it would help this sweet senior finally find a home. And it worked. When I walked up to his kennel, he reminded me of my first senior, Sugar, Kevin recalled. I fell in love immediately. In the meet and greet area, Bernie sealed the deal with kisses and wiggles. Today, Bernie is the king of his household, with a bed in every room, a backyard to explore, and endless affection and the security he longed for. He's our good boy, Kevin said. Honestly, I think senior dogs choose us. They just want to love, and we're lucky we get to give it to them. And this is the story from Furryside Chats, Heartwarming Adoption Tales, about Bernie in Paw Prints, the newsletter from the North Shore Animal League. Well, that brings us to our conclusion for Animal Companions for today. I do hope you've enjoyed the stories, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be healthy, everyone. Be happy. Be well. Bye-bye. Thank you.